Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LEGIONPODCAST. I am Murray Fox, and this week, with apologies to Janet Van Dyne, I am an agent of WASP. Oh. I am... I'm whacking all stinging pests single-mindedly. We're up at the lake, and it is apparently wasp season, and they've decided, I don't know what they put in the cottage when they built it, but it's like a magnet for wasps. There are like those little mud hives over the house, which are fine. They're visible, right? You can see them. They're a good target. But then they're also like burrowing in between the bricks and in between the siding.
That's the part you got to worry about.
Yeah, you can't get the foam inside the bricks. So it's been, I don't know. And nobody, thanks to COVID, has got wasp spray in stock. So,
oh, is that right? We're going to get to mine in a minute. And
is that the new cure?
There are parallels.
Is that the new cure? Take wasp spray.
That's right. Totally. I don't understand it, but I went like from one end of Huron County to the other end, and eventually I found like some foaming spray with like a tiny little nozzle. Because all the foam spray stuff says great for outside nests, not good for cracks, crevices, or voids. And I'm like, well,
right. Because the idea of these is for you to be like 20 feet back. Yeah.
Uh-huh. 100%. But the one product that says don't use it with holes comes with this tiny little like attachment, like a tiny skinny little tube that you can stick in the nozzle. So you can kind of sort of hold it and spray. So that's what I did last night. And then this morning at like 5 a.m, sprayed the spray into the bricks, under the siding, into the wood, but also like all over my hands, because of course it's not a perfect fit. So I'm like, I'm covered in wasp goo. And the plus side, the wasps are no longer coming into the house. They no longer seem to be congregating outside. It's down to a manageable level. No one has been stung or turned into like a mutant bee person, so I think we're all good.
Yeah, that is good. Yeah, I feel your pain, sir, because as I was outside this afternoon, Sarah and I, she was working on a craft. She has this thing of like toilet paper roll animals, like it's a craft kit. And so we were like, so I said to her, you know, you don't have to just do these ones. We can make our own. So we were working on a lion. And I said, why don't we sit outside to do it? Because then while we wait for paint to dry in between steps, you can ride your bike. And she's been practicing so much. And so today was a banner day, because not only was the biking going great, but she also finally turned the corner on tying her shoes. And a big day.
On behalf of teachers everywhere, I say thank you.
And we were like this year of all years, she has got to be able to tie her own damn shoes. And because no one's going to be able to help her. And
100%.
Yeah. So.
That's why I use Velcro.
Well, there's that, but, you know, it's. So anyway, as we're standing out there, the guy next door comes, pops over, and he's like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but I was out in the backyard, and I looked across, and I saw you guys have a wasp nest in the eaves. And, and he says it's not too big, but there's definitely one back there. And it's so there's like a section that's a bit of roof that's a bit higher. We have sort of a few different levels going on there, and it's of course at the highest level. And and so when you went, Murray, when you mentioned the wasp and you know, the wasp spray, and if you need any, I'm picking some up tomorrow, and they have 67 they have 67 in stock. So if you need any, just let me know and I'll grab.
Perfect.
Anyway, yeah. So for today, I am, well, I would say an agent of, but really my goal is to destroy them. You know, I am going to be the arch foe of Wasp Nest, because we're all sure Paul needs extra stinging time. So, yeah, so this is going to be our plan over the next couple of days. So I'll check it all out, and I'll send you a text.
Uh-huh. We can compare death notes, or compare like wasp sting bites, or
yeah, exactly.
It'll be wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I totally feel your pain. And now they don't seem to have made any way into the house, because it's of course like that Eve is on the other side of the bathroom, and I haven't seen any buzzing in there. But let me tell you, when we were having our little toothpaste discussion earlier with Sarah, I was like looking long, you know, do I see anything? No, I think we're good. So,
well, ours are like right by the screen door, and the bottom of the screen door has got like, I don't know what the planners were planning, but there's like three little air notches or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So like, or it's perfect. Like, there might as well be like blinking lights saying, enter here, come in here. Beep, beep, beep. Like, so of course, like we've had, like yesterday we had like 20, like one after another. They fortunately don't come in like swarms. They come in one at a time, just to test test.
What's this new area? Let's explore.
Yeah. Let's explore. Oh, anyway.
Right now.
We're all safe.
I can just see Paul bringing some of the wasp stuff to you. And in my head now, I can see the two of you. Kind of like Dan Aykroyd and John Candy in The Great Outdoors.
Yes!
That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, there must be something in the internet today. I don't have an issue, because it's not a wasp one, but it is Little Outdoor Critter Day, apparently.
Mm, yes.
Because this week, I am an agent of lizard.
Oh.
Little itty zoomers and really delicious. Because we have them there we have, because I'm in Florida, so we have lizards all over.
Yeah.
Those little guys.
Oh, yeah.
And they're cute. And I like seeing them run around. They're fun. Plus
they eat
bugs. Absolutely. My dog loves them too. Because he thinks it's snack time.
Yes.
So we go outside and sit. If we go outside to sit in the lanai, I have to like kind of look around first before I open the door to see, do I see anything out there? Do I need to stop him? And I gotta try, because he is definitely on the hunt constantly. Trying to eat them. I had to stop him from getting a little baby one the other day. Or actually, and the other day. It's been a bunch this week. He's been really going after them.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, don't. And then he jumps on the screen with his claws. Like, no, get off the screen. You don't have to rip it.
He's
on the other side. You're not gonna get him.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's it. They just put themselves out there.
I think they're just teasing him.
Messy.
But
alrighty. well, there's no real like neat segue, but I guess no, I haven't got anything. We'll just dive right in.
Yeah.
Legion 90, number 14.
Number 14, and we have ourselves a cool Maguire, Gordon, and Laverne Kinzierski cover with Mr. Star holding
cutest little baby.
The cutest little Tolokian baby.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so this is yes, and as we can see, it's fairly squishy, because we can see the the little divots of skin around the around Mr. Star's hands.
Yeah,
looks like he's about to shake that baby.
Looks a little bit that way. Yes, it's Play-Doh.
He's
and
got
he's
no
saying,
fingernails
come to daddy. No,
what the heck.
It's right, that's right, at least not in that image. I've never really noticed before. You know, are we to assume gloves or just the fact that, hey, why would we bother with nails on a...
I guess so, on a construct. But
yeah.
That's weird right. looking.
So we get into the issue, the Sound of Silence. Strata
Hugh, Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, exactly. Hello, darkness, my old friend. This issue is brought to us by Alan Grant, writer, Barry Kitson, penciler, and co-plotters. They are the co-plotters. So Kitson was getting into the into that side of it with Grant as Giffen had moved on, and. Yep. Then we've got Mark McKenna as the inker, Lovan Kinzerski is the colorist, Gaspar is the letterer, and the mighty Art Young is the editor.
He's a big monkey.
Yes, yeah, exactly. some sort of alien cowpoke. Talking to Strata and Stealth, saying they drove in out of the west, guns blazing, mowing down anybody who got in their way, cleaned out the bank and half the stores in town. Strata says, geez, what a mess. They must have been using exploding bullets. And Stealth says, I don't think so, Strata. Then Strata says, where are your local police? And the guy says, right there, the ones with the ruptured. Okay. looks like a sonic weapon, says Stealth. Cannon, probably, to cause wounds like these. Says, I'm really glad we were able to call in the LEGION to deal with this. These outlaws are stone killers. She says, as long as you pay, you got all the help you need. One thing, you're not quite what we expected. I mean, I don't see how one woman and two women, pal, says Strata. Oh, of course, begging your pardon, ma'am. But what can even two women on their own do? And Stealth looks at him and says, you'd be surprised. These bozos may give you guys the runaround, but we're professionals. We do the job, okay? And Strata says, don't worry. If we're not back in a week, send out a search party. And Stealth says, yeah, and a manicurist. Chauvinist creep. So they follow along, and there's the trail is quite obvious. And so Strata says, well, you don't have to be much of a detective to follow this trail. They haven't even tried to hide it. Stealth says, they hardly need to, do they? There's no organization to stop them, no Green Lantern Corps, no galactic peacekeeping force. So they ship high-tech weapons onto a low-tech world, and bingo, they rule the roost. Kill a lot, too, says Strata. I guess Doc started LEGION at just the right time. God knows worlds like this need us. Yeah, smart man, Doc, says Stealth. Curse his barren black little heart. Beg pardon? Never mind, personal. Aha, look at what we got here. And they've come across a big building. For outlaws, they're regular little empire builders. Remind you of anyone we know? speak of the devil. We switch back to LEGION headquarters. Moving everything along too fast, Phil. Shockingly... Larissa is taking issue with something Dox is doing. And the over under is going to be 6 panels before she mentions being planetary champion. you're forcing LEGION to run before we've learned how to walk. I know the galaxy is in a bad way, but if we really want to be of lasting help, we must grow slowly, naturally, organically. Like the crime rate does, Larissa. Oh, come on, Vril, you have to be reasonable. Do I? If memory serves, I'm in charge around here. No? Yes, of course, but, sir, ma'am, urgent call from the planet Rand. Can either of you take it? And they both say, I will. So here we are. I'm going to lose my bet. All right. But it is Elena and Sarda.
Which is surprising because I didn't think they actually showed up, but I guess we'll just have to see where it goes because we'll all see it in an issue or two. But
right. So clearly things, you know, were in the plans, right? Greetings, Virildox, Larissa Malor. I am Alana of Rand, daughter of Sardath. Recently, Rand's cities have been plagued by attacks from a group of space pirates. Our own champion, my husband, Adam Strange. Yes, I know of him. Of course, Art Young points out that Docs knows of Adam from the Invasion miniseries. Stardust says, Adam tried to defend us during the latest raid, but he was defeated and captured and taken as a hostage to their base. We need to help to free him, says Alana, and to protect our cities. And we're wondering if your LEGION is powerful enough for this task. Oh, yes, says Docs. Don't worry about that. You know our terms, 50% in advance, non-returnable. Of course, I have full authority to open the necessary credit lines. Excellent. You'll be hearing from us, Alana, Sardath.
Now, just go ahead. Ever since, I don't know, the last several years, ever since I've really seen him more and more, and also because they've actually put him in comics and stuff, or characters that look like him, anytime I see some bald white guy wearing that an outfit like that, I'm like, is that Grant Morrison?
Yeah, totally, exactly. And and hey, we would have just been a couple of years after where he was in Animal Man. So,
oh yeah.
In fact, you know, it's not that long before he. I'm just trying to figure out the timeline, but it's not that much longer before he shows up in Suicide Squad as well
and dies.
And dies. Yes, yes, he does. Yeah, so let's take a look here. So let's see exactly what they're faced with here. They operate out of a fortress base built into a massive asteroid. They take hostages from every world they raid, insurance against reprisals. Their leader, Dagon Ra, rumor has it he's a matter transformer, rules the scum who serve him with a fist of iron. Which is kind of funny, being a matter transformer. like, literally. They're a major problem for the Alpha Centauri sector. That's almost 30 worlds. If we can wipe out Dagon Ra and his freeboosters, half the galaxy will know our name. Every planet from here to the Magellanic clouds will be clamoring for LEGION services. 30 worlds, and all we have to do is defeat 1,000 or so heavily armed pirates? You're mad, Brill. I was just checking this. Okay. Just checking for his first appearance, and it is not yet. I mean, this should count, but it doesn't. And so she says, if we try to become too large too soon, the whole structure of LEGION will collapse. Your dream will be over before it's begun. Perhaps you're right. Leave me to think it over. All right, but please don't take any action without informing me first. And she walks out of the room, and he presses the button, says, Desk, send Lobo to my office at once.
He barely waits for the door to close.
Yeah, exactly. And enough that that Larissa and Lobo pass each other in the hall. Doc's ideas, she's thinking, are way beyond our present capabilities. Still, at least he seemed open to argument for a change. And she sees Lobo, says, Good morning, Lobo. Says who? And he thinks prig, she thinks boor. And then she walks past and says, I wonder how Beck is. Hard to believe he could fawn and plead with Docs after the way he and his eye took the rest of us apart. So she goes into the secure room, and FaZe is there, says, Hi, Larissa. Not a lot to report on the Garen front, I'm afraid. He just sits there brooding. It's hard to say how exactly, but he seems to be changing. Metamorphosing slightly, though into what, I have no idea. And as for the eye, well, it doesn't really do a whole lot except look. I wish I knew what he was thinking. But whatever, I don't think we're doing him very much good. And so Larissa asks about his test results. She says, gobbledygook to me, I'm afraid. Commander Docs took them for analysis. And the eye is looking at Larissa through the window, and she says, that thing gives me the creeps. FaZe asks, did I do right giving them to the commander, I mean? He's in charge, FaZe, not me, says Larissa, unfortunately. But while we're on the subject, a word of warning. Vril Docs has little understanding of other people's emotions, and he's not always open in his dealings. Be careful. Apart from everything else, for anything else. He blames you for the Derlin's disappearance. And she says, I know, he makes it obvious. And the worst of it is, for all I know, he's right. So we move back onto the planet with Stealth and Strata standing outside the big building, alien HQ. So Strata says, so what do you think? She says, well, I don't see him lining up to surrender. Perhaps if you let them know we're here. Knock? Loud. Strata pounds on the door. Hey, you deadbeats, open up this door. And we see a little password window open. What's your beef, Jack? I'm female, actually. We're here on behalf of LEGION to arrest you for murder and sundry other crimes. Is that a fact? Listen, chump. You know what we got in here? A sonic friggin' cannon is all. And you're gonna arrest us? I guess that'll be after Sligo here reduces your bodies to a vibrating pulp. But before you explode, right? Get serious, Sparkles. And, Strata says, well, I knocked. Time for the foot in the door treatment, wouldn't you say? And Stealth says, you're catching on, honey. And so Strata rears up a foot and smashes through the wall. And the guy says, Sligo says, die screaming, suckers! Nothing. And even a wordless word balloon. Didn't it say in
that
the brochure?
That never happens.
Yeah.
Word balloons are never wordless. They are crammed full.
and Stell says, didn't it say in the brochure, sonic cannon's not much use against a lady who can absorb sound at will? So the guy says, so see how smart you are at absorbing bullets, sister? Blow them away, guys. So I should be engaging Ultra Dillinger voice. So, see how smart you are to absorb the bullets, sister. Blow them away, guys. And so Strata gets in there, and the bullets are all bouncing off her. And she says, now, you have to guess what my special power is. And no takers? All right, I'll give you another clue. Quite clearly, it's clobbering time. And the clobbering begins. And Sligo says, what's the matter? You're fighting like a bunch of Phoebes. They're only women, for crying out loud. Kill them. And Stealth says, not only the boys get to play with the toys, pal. Blam, blam. And Stealth, no, we can handle this lot without killing. And Sligo says, I don't believe this. The big one's stopping to argue. Say cheese, babes. And and he blasts Strata. And it looks like Strata's got like a new growth of crystal.
Yeah, spiky.
Yeah.
Pointy.
And we go back, and there's baby Lydia. Mama. And we see what looks like Larissa. I'm here, Lydia. Always remember, daughter of mine, light of my life. Mommy loves you. And grabs and zaps. And you think, hey, wait a second. This isn't Larissa at all.
You would be right.
Yes, and then we see the robot. Baby hooked up to all kinds of stuff, right? And yes, it is a robot, robot Larissa, and right next to Mr. Star, who says, "Excellent. All of my instruments display maximum distress. Already, the critical neural pathways are forged in her brain. A few more such sessions, and she will irredeemably associate her mother with pain and fear." Which soon will fuse into full-blown hatred. Scream on, Lydia Maller. Let your hate grow until it is the perfect instrument for my revenge. Revenge! back to HQ. And Docs and Stealth are talking, and Doc says, this is useless. It doesn't make any kind of sense. She says, I'm sorry, but I ran the test exactly as you told me. If it'll help, I'll go in and interrogate him personally. You're the last person I need for help from, says Docs. You've caused enough trouble here already. Open up. I'll talk to him myself. Yes, sir. She thinks to herself, whatever happened to his pet Derlin, I wish it hadn't. He's always going to blame me. And so Docs goes in and says, how are you, Garen? He says, how the grok should I know? You're supposed to be analyzing me. And Doc says, I'm not getting very far. I've learned virtually nothing about the eye, and about intelligible data to go on, there's little I can do for you. But you have to help me. Crockett, Docs, you promised. Sorry, Garen. It looks as if you're going to have to learn to help yourself for once.
That's going to go over real well.
Yeah. You rotten swine. You have to do something. Look at me. I'm a foot taller than I was a week ago. The eye, it's doing things to me, changing me. You promised, you bastard, you promised. And he grabs Doc's by the lapels or the shoulder epaulets and says, Doc says, Beck, that's enough. This behavior won't help anyone. You have to be calm. You have to try to think things through. I'm sorry. I just feel so helpless. It's also unfair. I didn't ask for any of this, you know. I didn't ask the eye to latch onto me. Hey, what the grok's it doing with you? Same old Docs, eh? Sweet talk me while you try to trick me. Take my eye away. Don't be stupid. Well, you can't have it. You hear? It's mine, mine, mine. And he says mine, and it goes off. The eye goes off, and out comes big old green beam. You maniac, Beck! I'll and then Docs gets knocked out by it. And FaZe comes through, says, Garen, stop, please. You'll hurt him. It's what the creep deserves. Docs isn't your enemy. He really is trying to help you. I guess you're right. Maybe I overreacted, you think? But I just don't trust the guy. And Docs leaves, gets up, drags himself up and says, I'll leave you to it then, Beck. You're obviously more comfortable with FaZe than me. Beck says to FaZe, sorry about that. Normally I'm not an aggressive person, you know? And she says, I know, Garen. Only when some sleazebag tries to steal my eye.
It's interesting now in these issues to see how they're... Because Docs is definitely the most interesting character with the way he does things. And interesting to see now how they're having him interact with people. I mean, it's not in this issue with Stealth, but with FaZe, you can see the obvious disdain and hatred. But with everyone else, it's almost like he's softening towards them. Like, he's trying to be calm to Beck. And even with Larissa, he's not listening to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I don't know if you... Have you guys watched Black Lightning?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm almost done with season 3. So do you remember when Dr. Jace is being killed by the Markovians and, like, she's trying to get Doc Lynn Stewart to be friends with her? And she's talking to the computer. She's like, I made a list of how to make friends. And it's like... Make eye contact. Say their name. Pretend to listen. It's like Docs has the same list. He's not listening. He's pretending to listen. It's like, I care enough to pretend to care. I'm not going to care, but I care enough to pretend.
Yeah, he's read How to Win Friends and Influence People.
you know, and it's interesting when you say that. I was listening to something today, and they were talking about... Well, they're talking about Rain Man and how there was an interview with a guy who served as kind of a basis for the original story. And then there was an interview with him 20 years later. And they're like, oh, well, he seems to really definitely be understanding, how to interact with people better. And the handler was kind of, well, sort of. Because basically what he's done is he's studied the social cues. These are the things I'm supposed to do. I don't get why we do them, but that seems to make them
right.
Right. And it's a similar thing. This pretend to listen to them.
Docs in issue 1 would have just ignored Larissa right away and said, no, I'm going with my plan. He just lets her think he's listening and thinking about it. But the moment she shuts the door and it's not there, he's like, send Lobo in.
Totally.
Yeah, so it's just kind of fun to watch how they're doing his interactions with them.
Oh, absolutely. So we land back on whatever planet they're on.
We didn't get a name.
Yeah. And these little sort of crystalline protrusions are all over Strata. And Strata says, Stealth, what's happening to me? She says, it must be the sonic vibrations acting on your crystal structure. I lost concentration, but I can absorb the gun's sonic frequencies now. But what'll I do? Just don't panic. Hang on till I deal with the rest of these bums. All right, Scuzzballs.
That's what happens. You pick one zit, and they just spread.
There you go. There you
Actually, Strata looks like she's drawn by Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, totally.
That's
totally
true.
All right, Scuzzballs, guns on floor, hands in air, and it's jail instead of Graves. You talk big, woman, says Sligo. Look, pal, the pop gun may impress the locals, but back where I come from, they eat guys like you for lunch. Still, if you want to mix it, let's mix. And she starts, just basically kicking ass and taking names. She says, just yell when you've had enough. She's slaughtering them. I'm going to have to risk maximum power, says Sligo. And so he does that, and Stealth, you see the sort of a cloud around, and you see everybody kind of blowing up around them. And Stealth says, oh, did I forget to mention I can deflect sound as well? Silly me, and you've wiped out all your pals, too. So, you grown a brain yet? Want to surrender? I'm warning you, sister. Keep back from me. I'll overload. We'll both go up. And kawoom. And there goes Sligo. Stealth says, interesting theory. You okay, Strata? Strata says, I guess. Can't say I'm the same for the fortress after that last blast, though. Roof's coming down. Oh, damn. And the roof comes down around them. Stealth. But it's okay because Strata manages to crawl out of the rubble and bring Stealth. And Stealth says, thanks, pal. If you hadn't thrown yourself over me. And he says, yeah, lucky I didn't impale you. Anyway,
Lucky. Like,
seriously. All over.
I nearly cost us our lives in there. And she says, you and me both. The mistakes weren't all yours. So what do you say we make a deal? No more arguments. We each do what we feel is best, on jobs at least. Sounds fair. We are a team after all, says Strata. Our first duty is to each other. How about get me home before I stab us to death? And so off they go. Meanwhile, elsewhere, we see a little building with a sign that says Last Grog on Planet. Cheap, too. And we see someone fly out of the window, and then someone else fly out of the window. And someone flies out the door and out the window. And then another one out the door. And crash. Scrunch. And we see another guy who tried to get out of the chimney. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we hear, now, about that drink. And we get in there. And Lobo is having words with, well, he's already taken care of the patrons. Now he's having words with the bartender. And as soon as you're finished pouring it, you can tell me how I go about joining up with Dagon Ra and his gang. I've had it with those L-E-G-I-O-N wimps. I thought I could hack it, but I can't take it anymore. I want to be a pirate. And there we go.
Well, some people don't want to be pirates. Some people do.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld doesn't want to be a pirate.
Be a pirate. Nope.
Yeah. He does not.
But if Niedermeyer was asking Lobo, what do you want to do with your life? He'd say, I want to be a pirate.
That sounds right,
Murray. And so there we go. That is issue 25.
25
or 14?
14. 25. Where did I get that from?
Is that
it's page 25.
Saying, is that the new counting now?
Yeah.
This is a metric system thing, isn't it? I always get that mixed up. I always get confused.
Totally. Yes.
You people in your metric.
Metric years, exactly. So there we go. I find the art grows by leaps and bounds each issue. There's just new aspects to it, and I think that the colors were especially vivid here, which is great, especially given with the eye around and all that.
I just thought it's
neat how the art style has evolved, even just since McKenna first came on. Because,
And story-wise, for the most part, there was the connecting tissue stuff with the stuff happening back at HQ. But for the most part, this was basically the Stealth and Strata go on a solo mission, just a single issue story.
Yeah.
But for something that could have just been done anywhere, this was really good. Like, I really enjoyed their little team up.
Yeah. I like seeing them kind of out in the, sort of the buddy cop side of it.
Yeah. And plus now they're doing something, actually.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not just building the team and it's actually fulfilling what the, you know, the mission of the team, which is cool.
Yeah, it's just showing them, like, okay, we're doing this now. We actually have worlds working, paying us, and so now we're on various missions. We're on Cowboy World.
Yes, Cowboy World.
And Pirate World is just around the corner.
Apparently, indeed. Yes.
And is this their stealth way of bringing in more Legion Reeses? Because the first thing I think of when I hear Matter Transmuter is, like, is he going to be from Trom?
Yes. Yes, the answer to that is all right, yes, makes sense. Yeah. yeah, so yeah, Dagon Rall show up next issue, and I believe it is, if not implicitly stated or explicitly stated, I think it is implied that I think they actually say it at some point. So we'll learn more about Dagon Rall next issue. Oh, the next two issues are so good. Ah, yes,
I'm looking forward to it, because I remember hearing that name before. I remember that name.
Like, well, you know what I thought the same thing, and that's why I looked it up as they mentioned him, and that's where, you know, like, the just looking at the dc.fandom.com site just to sort of determine first appearances and all that, and so yes, Dagon Ra is now the name. What that led me to first was of course Dagon the Avenger. From the Superboy-less Legion sort of early on, right? Wasn't he the one who kidnapped all the parents?
He kidnapped the parents, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think given who we've got coming up soon, a Matter Transmuter is going to be a problem. But yeah, so definitely from Trom, and of course this is a Trom from a century, you know, or a millennia before Roxas sort of cleared the place out. So
another space pirate.
Yes, our, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
also, the first thing I think of is the Lovecraft story Dagon.
Oh yeah, of course, and that's got to be where they all got the name from.
Well, and like, it's also apparently a biblical thing too, so that's probably where Lovecraft got it from. Oh. But they're probably thinking Lovecraft, to be fair. Either one works.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was just trying to see if, yeah, so created by Alan Grant and Barry Kitson. So I don't know if there was a lot of Lovecraft type stuff in the 2000 AD days, but you know, it was definitely a big deal again at this time, because we were seeing a lot of sort of Lovecraft style fiction coming out around this period. So
yeah, I think they had the game out too, the role playing game out around this time.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, with what I find interesting is just this this idea of getting to see some of these other planets. You know, we've seen elements of them now, and you know, with the invasion, of course, and really the only one we've kind of seen in this book so far is Talok, as far as those sort of heritage worlds. Trom will be neat, and
And Kolu.
Yeah. Oh, and Kolu. Yeah, you're true. Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's kind of neat to start seeing some of these places, and I wonder if we'll ever see Big Zatol.
Yeah, I wonder about that, but because that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, especially given the way now, again, I don't know if they've kind of moved on from that original explanation of Tinya's, or that explanation of Tinya's powers, where she would kind of slip into that dimension, basically, and that's how she was able to phase through stuff.
Right. Well, this issue came out 2 weeks after Legion 6, so after the dinner with Mordru.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little like the Secret Origins, Tenya's Secret Origins would have been before that, but not a whole lot much before that, right? Like that
was like they had beer bomb. Yeah, because they actually, you know, teased that as being part of her power, of how her powers work, back in the...
during Reflecto.
Yes, in the aftermath of the saga, saga.
Well,
yes.
But the question is, how much of that, what does that mean exactly? I mean, if she's not going there and, like, actually physically being there, is she, could, I mean, fully, like, where she sees it, because then she wouldn't see what's happening here.
If well, she's, and that's...
If, that, like, someone's shooting at her, she's phasing, she would be not seeing them then.
And that's so. what I was kind of getting to there is they tease that as sort of part of, you know, how she kind of would slip into the Big Zadel buffer zone, which we saw was more like a we would later learn that would replace the Phantom Zone, right? Wouldn't it?
Right.
And so, which will become an important thing to keep in mind coming up, and. That would be the buffer zone, and but later Kitson working with Mark Waid on the three boot, they would lean further into that, and she actually would, you know, basically slip into the other dimension, and
that's right, I remember that, but that's, yeah. That's the three boots, that's a that
no different. totally it just it, again, you know, I just
well, things to yeah. think about,
yeah, exactly. So anyway, so we get to see someone from Trom next issue, and and then the next issue we get to see a lot of new people.
Yes, we do.
And so that one. will be awesome. And we get into a neat stretch of really cool covers too. I really dug this one.
Didn't DC had a thing around this time where, like, I kind of felt like it's something I saw something similar with, like, a very almost like photorealistic background, but with like the drawn characters in front of it. Because that brick wall looks almost real in comparison to the characters that look like they were drawn. But that brick wall really almost looks like they took a picture and just kind of put a filter on it.
Yeah, and I think they were just starting to be able to do that kind of stuff with textures. And there were all kinds of different new printing processes that they were trying at this stage. And we had Joe Phillips on the sub show last week, and he couldn't remember for the life of him what the process was. But he used to do a lot of painted covers and that kind of stuff. And it reminds me of something that Adam Crouch posted on the Facebook page a little while back, where he had like one of the Legionnaires covers with like three transparencies. And so they would actually like have the photograph, and then they would layer over the comic art and then shoot it to film from that.
Huh.
And so they were doing all these new processes at the time. And most of which they wouldn't do now. Right. And so I don't know if that was something that would have been on the Kitson side of things, where he would be like, yeah, let's have a brick wall in the background that looks kind of realistic. Or whether that would be like, where he's like, I'm going to make that happen. Or it's Laverne, when you get to this issue, like, maybe that's why we see Laverne Kandzierski's name on the cover, where we don't always see that.
Could be, yeah.
Right?
Because this is one of the rare occasions where a colorist is.
And if you'll note, McGuire and Gordon's names show up on the inked side, right? Laverne's kind of blends more in with the brick wall.
Which would make sense then.
Yeah. So, not sure, not 100% sure, and that's largely speculation. But as I say, like, around this time period, they were experimenting with a lot of new printing processes, and Joe went into detail about one of them that they used to use with painted covers and being able to sort of blend in the line art as well. And they do some really neat things with the covers. The next one I think is one of my favorites. Just because it's just a really quirky looking thing. And you know, I mean, Maguire at the time was had become, you know, pretty mainstream, right? So so it wasn't as expected. And but all these covers he's done on this series have been great, and they've all been kind of different from his usual thing over over in the JLI camp. And and this is kind of another thing that that we learned in talking to Joe Phillips, is that at the time each DC office was its own little fiefdom. And I mean, we know that because we know about the whole Superman office versus Valor.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that even goes back. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. No, and it goes back further than that. You're absolutely right. But at this point, like, they were, you know, Joe told a story about when he got hired to do Mr. Miracle. And he'd sent a bunch of samples to all of the different editors. And he had one call him back and say, yeah, it's not really what we're looking for right now. And Joe's like, that's okay, I don't care. I'm already doing work for you guys. And
I'm over your books.
Yeah, they didn't share that kind of information. And so you might get something where maybe you know, Andy Helfer wasn't as big on them doing kind of odd things art wise because, like, when we get to issue 17, they take this brick wall thing a step further. And
I'm looking at that right now.
Yeah, and again, I see Laverne Kinzerski listed on as one of the cover artists, and there's a signature on there. Yet for the issue before, Laverne gets a mention on the other one, too. Yeah, so it's interesting. I didn't realize that the crediting of colorists always felt like it was more of a newer thing. But here we are looking at a book from nearly, from 30 years ago. And they are acknowledging the colorist on the cover. So there you have it. But it's neat to see, you know, new looks to things. But that story was more to describe as to why it seems that, like, one line of books was, you know, doing really different types of covers, and the other one was still doing, like, 70s style It Can't Be You covers. And and remember, like, this is a period of which where we're still getting actually covers that have something to do with the story in some way, and was not always going to be the way.
Yeah, it's not just a cool image of a character.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had a couple of those sort of iconic covers, like when they issue 11, for example. But again, that tied into the story. So,
well, yeah, they still kind of tie in. That one, like you said, that one is about they actually was becoming a team.
Yeah, and for sure.
And this one still has something to do with what happens. We don't exactly see this scene on the cover, but thematically.
No, but yeah, exactly. And that's exactly it. And, you know, it doesn't need to be something knocked out of it, but it's certainly evocative. And I'm trying to think of when Kevin Maguire would have done the cover of Justice League International, where it was the, buy this book or this cat gets it.
The JLE one.
That's what this reminds me of.
That was JLE. I think that might have been Bart Sears, actually.
Oh, no, if it was JLE, I didn't realize it was. But you're right, the cat was Kara's.
Yeah, that was Power Girl's cat.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of that, I just remembered, they did do an issue, like a cover like this. JLA 26, 27, it's the one where Blue Beetle is basically tries to kill Max Lord, and they send in Amanda Waller to deprogram him, and it's like The Exorcist.
Yes. Yes, and we even get like the light. Yeah, the light fixture on the. That's right. Wow. Crazy. Yeah. So there we go. So that's
alrighty. That's it. The lever column is pretty. There's not much going on in there. They're just, you know, people are. They're happy that we have a likable member in FaZe. They are, there's nothing exciting in the letter column right now.
Well, that's okay, because in our letter column.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Let's see here. And this one, I feel like I've had it, you know, I've had some of these for ages because I haven't been on the last couple of weeks, but I just wanted to share a couple here. David Spofforth commenting on episode 10, where we spoke about FaZe's first appearance. He says, "Hi, team. I've read the issue with Tinya's cousin. I didn't see the point of it then and still don't. Just call it a zero-hour end-of-an-era chronology fluctuation. It was always Tinya. But in the grand tradition of Donna Troy, some people don't know when to leave a retcon alone." Preach.
It's like, just let it go. Let it happen. Yeah,
exactly. We get the new origin of FaZe in Legion of Superheroes 100, which shows that it really was Tinya all along, sent back in time by the Luck Lords and swapped with the Derlin. Don't know where he went in this reboot chronology, though. The Tinya who became FaZe was one of three Tinyas, separated at birth because she had a Kargite dad.
That's right.
She merged back with Apparition in Legion 100, and that was the last time we saw FaZe as a distinct person.
That's a better that's better than just going into limbo, at least.
Yeah, it's but I the Donna Troy analogy does apply, doesn't it?
Not arguing.
whatsoever on that. But you're right. Better than what we got. Yeah.
But at least it was. You know, it still was Tinya, and at least they did something with it where she was not just randomly in limbo. She actually was still used for several more years because she was still
Definitely,
you know, Legion of Superheroes team, the post-zero hour team. So at least, you know, I'll give that. At least it ended up better.
Yeah, for sure.
I forgot about that. So thank you, David.
And he says, "Oh, and since I didn't mention it before, yes, this is the best Lobo ever." Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's so good. I want to be a pirate. And Jerry Seinfeld voicing Lobo.
Yes, as it should be. All right. I'll do these a bit out of receiving order because I'll cover another comment from David on episode 11. This was Docs versus Lobo, Dawn of Legion. He says, if there was a substitute Legion, surely Docs would assign Beck to lead it.
Oh, you deal with that.
Yeah. He says, though, mind you, that would probably likely be pretty much the same as if Docs just killed them. Yes, you are not wrong, sir. Then Maurice Walker, and Maurice, I apologize because you sent this one by the time you hear this, it'll have been weeks, but production schedules, et cetera, et cetera. I've almost read it twice on the other show, though. So he says, hello, Legion POD casters. After 12 episodes, I was finally able to take a break from serving as an agent of Biome, back issue organizing mammal, to share my thoughts. That's awesome. Please, folks, send us in your acronyms. So glad the subs finally greenlighted a spinoff. if this was a Dick Wolfer NCIS podcast, a sibling show would have been launched much sooner. Now, let me think about that for a second. I guess we were, we were 9 years into Law and Order before SVU showed up.
SVU?
Yeah.
Was it that long? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, they have other spin-offs before that, or is that the first one?
No, I'm pretty sure that was the first one.
That was the first one, and then the next year was Criminal Intent.
Criminal Intent.
Yeah. And then they pulled Jerry Orbach away from the mothership for the courtroom one with B.B. Newirth.
Yeah, I liked that one. For the two episodes we got.
That's the only thing I didn't like about it was that they pulled Orbach away for it, and then we didn't get him back. Now I think that's because he also died around then too. But you know, yes. But Dick Wolf was much quicker on the draw with spinoffs of like the Chicago things and NCIS. Although I think NCIS has been going on forever. I think even New Orleans has been going on for like 7 seasons now, and I feel like it just started. So
Oh, no, yeah, it has been going long because my wife likes it, and she saw it on Netflix. She's like, it doesn't have the newer seasons, and it has like 15 of them on there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Like, yeah, the original NCIS started in about 17 years ago. And then LA started maybe 10 years ago, something like that.
No, the subs are more like Supernatural. You keep trying, you know, they keep thinking about doing a spinoff, but it doesn't never works out.
There you go. But here we are. But here we are. All right. He says, one of the reasons I'm excited about this show is because much of LEGION's early years are a blind spot. I purchased issue 9 back in 1989 at the recommendation of my comic book dealer at the time. He knew I was a Legion of Superheroes fan and tried to sell me on the Tinya connection. Being a wee lad at the time, I could not quite grasp the series since there was a lack of tights and recognizable superheroes or heroines outside of Faze. Over the years, I dipped my toe back into the title when crossovers occurred, like War of the Gods. Okay, so that's coming up. So we are definitely before Grant Morrison has...
yeah, that's 31 yes. is the War of the Gods crossover.
Right, okay, yeah. And he says, or the Legion of Superheroes connection was played up like in the final year. Last year, I started finding LEGION back issues in 50 cent and dollar bins. Oh, baby. That's talk my language.
There you go.
Missed the bins. He says, I purchased the initial 20 issues. I enjoy reading along week to week and plan on getting the remaining issues. That's awesome. And he says, now, I know this is not a General Hospital podcast, but I am a regular watcher of the show since the mid-1990s, and since Paul brought up General Hospital, I wanted to share that Laura's rape at the hands of Luke did have consequences. When Laura's long-lost firstborn son, Nicholas Cassadine, arrived in 1996, now, to be fair, nearly 20 years after. Right.
True.
So, to be fair. He says, the character dropped this bomb on half-brother Lucky, who is apparently Luke and Laura's son, and devastated their family. LEGION members like Stealth, Docs, and Larissa could probably learn something from soap operas and be wary of long-lost children. Indeed. Yes. And I gotta ask my sister about that because I know she was watching through most of the 90s as well.
I thought she had long-lost children.
No. Well, explains so much. She doesn't listen to this. Anyway, so kindly, Mo Walker, eager LEGION recruit. P.S. Sounds like a number of folks are using this pandemic to reevaluate and reorganize their comic collections. If you've got time to do so, absolutely. Absolutely. I triggered a horrible allergy attack last week when I did some long box sorting. And messy stuff. And I think that is all of it. There we go. So there we go. There's our letters column.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Speaking of crossovers, it looks like we will be getting to one soon.
Yes.
In a couple episodes. There's a crossover. The first annual.
The annual. Yeah,
yes. Now.
I mean, if we are doing it the order they have it on looking on DC Universe, because it's issue 17 and then annual 1. So if we're doing it in that order,
then I mean, we'd be doing whatever it order it happened, right?
In 4 episodes, we'd be doing a crossover.
I had forgotten that is all about true. That.
With the with a guy with a big red S on his chest.
You know what's funny is so we also need to do the Superman annual.
And
that was one I could not find forever and ever and ever. It took me year, and I was picking these up as they came out, and I never found that one until recently, I think.
The Superman annual?
Yeah. I had the Legion side of it, but not the.
And so I can't remember which order that exactly happens in, but
I'm looking right now. I'm bringing it up real quick just to see if it says, you know, continuing on. Okay, no, it doesn't look like. I think the Legion one might be first. Yeah, the Legion one's first, I believe.
Okay.
It looks like the beginning of the story. And actually, the funny thing is, I don't know where it is now, but I had the Superman annual. I just never had the Legion one.
Yeah, I found the Superman one. As I was going through the bins, so Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's it all starts here. That's right. Okay. So that that'll be fun. You're right. It's a great crossover, and
definitely puts Legion definitely in the DCU than fully the modern day DCU, because I mean, teaming up with Superman, you don't get
definitely
in the DCU, that can't say it's not part of it.
Yeah, 100%. And what a great time of Superman that was too. So I guess we're into the time and time again sort of era. And I don't know that I'm looking at this Legion annual, and maybe I read it. I'm sure I did. This was the year where they were all checker boxes.
Yes. On the cover.
Right.
Yep.
And there were some good ones in that. And I look ahead. Annual two is, of course, an Armageddon 2001 crossover.
Yeah, I've been skimming through.
Yeah, we're heading into the era where
all the annuals were, and then the next annual is Eclipso.
Woohoo!
Annual number four is Bloodlines. I can't remember who their character was.
Oh, we do get Bloodlined, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's Bloodlined, and then we also get, before the series ends, we get an Elseworlds annual.
We get an Elseworlds
annual. Yeah, and it's great. Cool. It's really great, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've read that one.
And you know what I find interesting is just like the and like Mike McCone does the Bloodlines annual. Ah, beautiful art.
Feel like the annuals for this series are genuinely pretty good, like consistently good. Like there's not even if they're shackled to like a Bloodlines or a Darkness Within Eclipso thing. They generally do a good job with it.
Yeah, and I kind of remember Legion and Docs having like a decent part in actually the Eclipso story. Like, I think he's a decent... I have to go back and reread it, but I thought he was a decent part in Eclipso number two.
And it's pretty important for... definitely. Well, it's pretty important for Valor as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Wow, the art in that... again, McCone does the art in Eclipso annual as well, and Kitson writes it.
Yeah, McCone gets a couple annuals, I think.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does three and four. Oh God, it's beautiful stuff. Good.
I've been skimming through these. I'm looking at the covers right now that Dan Brereton is going to be doing later on.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'm also into that because I just I backed a Kickstarter of his where he did his series Giant Killer that came out like in the late 90s, early 2000s from DC.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
He did I guess he owns it because he actually did a Kickstarter to do a hardcover of it. And that just came in like last week.
Oh, wow.
So, and I'm really enjoying rereading that. But I'm looking through him, seeing his covers. Like, he has one of like Garb and Lobo and Lady Quark for 26.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But we'll get to these eventually.
Absolutely. We're definitely cheating and looking ahead.
I know, but sometimes it's hard to resist.
Totally. So there we go.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up then.
Right. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can head over to legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com and you'll see the LEGION episodes, EPISODES, and you can basically leave a comment on any of those. You can also send an email to the Legion of Substitute Podcasters at gmail.com email address, and I will try and save it for this show and not read it on the other one. It's very confusing. but there we have it. So those are the ways to get in touch with us. That's all I got.
Alrighty then, we will see you all next WEEK.
Woohoo!
SOLONG.
Bye.